Hello, welcome to BitNote. This is David Collins and we'll be talking about video games and video game music. Enjoy! Hi everyone. Now, I don't like to repeat myself. I really don't like to repeat myself. Okay, that's a really lame joke. But anyway, the fact of the matter is that a while ago I played music from a classic game, Another World. But unfortunately, I don't feel that I got enough time to talk about it. I mean, look, sometimes you got all these songs and you want to cram as much goodness as you can into the short period of time, but sometimes you just slip out, and I feel that that game deserves a little more talking about. And if you're bored about it, then I apologize, but please don't change the radio station because I'd still like to tell you anyway. Since I've got an unwritten rule that in order to talk about a game I have to play music from it first, I guess I'll just have to play yet another track from that great game, Another World, by Eric Cahy. And that was the intro to Another World, created by Eric Cahy, and the music there was made by Jean-François Freitas. Now, the music you'd hear would play over a cutscene that started the game. Now, in case you don't know what a cutscene is, it's essentially a non-interactive scene, a movie, a video clip, if you will, that's in a video game. And they got their name from Manic Mansion, where literally it would cut away from the action and show the video or scene that's happened and then cut back to the action. That was kind of annoying because you'd be in the middle of doing something and suddenly you'd be showed something that's slightly related to what you're doing, but not completely. But these days, cutscenes have become a huge part of video games. They're basically movies or clips. They might show characters interacting. And to be honest, some people say they're completely overused because what you have is a bunch of frustrated animators who desperately want to work in films find themselves in video games. They'll say something like, "Damn it, I can't believe I'm working in video games rather than films. I know what I'll do. I'll create a great big CG movie right here in this video game studio, and we'll just put it into the game, and we'll all be happy." It doesn't quite work out like that, and there's a number of reasons why it doesn't work. Because sometimes people just want to play the game, and if they keep getting scenes or video clips or of things that are happening or things they mightn't care about, they'll just get a little confused. And it could also be strange, because sometimes you'll have like a really interesting story, a really interesting movie, but between all the video clips that explain this, you have to do some really humdrum video game and just hack and slash. But I'm kind of going off the point. Another World was actually a game that actually started, that was one of the earliest uses of these games. Like I said, Manic Mansion technically did it before. But Another World, I mean, this is almost how you do it right. It started with this great big clip of a guy, it's a It's the outside of a laboratory, darkest of nights. A Ferrari screeches up. A guy gets out. He moves into a lift, gradually descends down, suddenly finds himself into a bunker where he enters a code and gets scanned by a computer to make sure it's okay. And then he sits down by a console. He starts this whole programming. It's a particle accelerator, great ring of a particle being shot around the place. And just the experiment runs, and just as it reaches its height, lightning strikes, literally. And suddenly the lightning interacts with the particle accelerator, and before you can even realize what happened, you and your character have been suddenly transported right into the middle of the lake. Your desk, your everything. And you suddenly find yourself in this lake, and all the pieces of desk are gradually floating downwards. And then a tentacle reaches up and you slowly sink down. It reaches up and slowly sinks down and it grabs you and it pulls the guy to his death. And suddenly you realize, wait a second, you were actually meant to be controlling him by that point. So then some code pops up and you restart. And then again, yet again, you appear in the lake. And this time you press up on the joystick or the arrow key or whatever. And you swim to the surface and pull yourself out. And you find yourself in this alien world. It's desolate. A beast roars in the background. You notice that there are more than two moons. And then that's where the adventure begins. And boy, I mean boy. Obviously, this is just the start of your problems. And there are so many other things. An alien civilization, alien monsters and beasts, finding yourself in underground caverns, suddenly finding yourself in Colosseum. I don't really want to spoil everything, although I don't know how much of you are going to play it. But I mean, the game just throws you into a new world and you're pretty much trying to react to everything that it throws at you. Because boy, this game is actually pretty unforgiving. I mean, I know there's kind of like this almost elitist thing among gamers saying that games were harder back then. But regardless of how true that thing is, this game was hard. And what's more, it was frustrating. I mean, for a start, part of the game involved you had a laser gun at one point and you can use it. And some of the games you have to like have laser fast reflexes. I mean, that's another thing about this. It wasn't a shooting game. I mean, it didn't indulge in shooting games. That was just a tool you were using. But you had to have, at sometimes you had to have laser fast reflex in order to kill everyone. And if you were a little too slow, then you kind of got screwed over. That was frustrating in and of itself. The other slight problem was that there were a lot of puzzles associated with it, and if you couldn't figure out a puzzle, it would drive you nuts. Just like almost any adventure or puzzle game out there, you could get stuck. And when you got stuck, you weren't sure what to do. But somehow, despite all these frustrating elements, you really kept going. You conquered the challenges, you dealt with the situations, and you just tried to figure out the system that would actually work. And I mean, the game was so rewarding because it kept throwing you into diverse situations. The control scheme seemed to remain the same, but you know, at one moment, like I said, you get thrown into a lot of different locations. A lot of them require new sort of thinking, and you have to do all these crazy sort of actions. And of course, like I said, there's the atmosphere, there's the aesthetics, and of course, there's also just, I mean, the challenge of surviving in this alien world is almost one of the exciting things about it. Because let's face it, if any of us were transported to an alien world and had absolutely no clue of how anything operated, our chances of survival would be pretty damn meek. And actually, the game actually, for a lot of deaths, the game actually has a small quick cutscene giving a bit more detail on how exactly you die. Yes, I know it's a little morbid, but damn it, there's so many ways. I mean, Right after you get dragged by, if you avoid getting dragged down by those tentacles, which is actually pretty easy once you know what to do, you've got these little creatures that suddenly have a tiny little tip, and if they scratch you on your leg, you'll automatically die from the poison. Yes, I know, kind of. So it's one of those games where you just keep at it, you keep learning, you keep trying new things, and every so often you'll find there'll be a cutscene or a new exploration where you'll find yourself in a new area and you just keep going on, and boy, it's amazing. I mean, it was made by one guy, and I think this is one of those examples where it just shows that one guy can really have the spirit to, where just having one guy can really express what they think. And, you know, it's not just some board out there saying, you can't do this, you can't do that. I mean, they'll probably tell him to make the game easier. Who wants something like that? Ironic statement. But the guy says just the guy really expressed what he wanted, and that's one of the great things about the game, because it's something that you don't think you would have gotten if it was just a bunch of guys trying to make something that they all understood from the outset. The game was released in the early 90s. It was hugely successful. It went, well, hugely successful in terms of that it got ported to pretty much every platform, including the Mega CD, the Mega Drive, Super Nintendo. It was called Another World, but when it was released in America, it was called Out of This World in order to avoid the naming conflict with a sitcom. And on a technical level, it employed something called vector art. It's an interesting technology that was pretty much, I mean, not that many people were doing at that stage, but he was able to use it, and that was one of the reasons he was able to create these cutscenes, because if he'd done it how other people were doing it, they would have taken up so much space. Vector art's interesting because instead of telling the computer what color each individual part of the image is, you're basically giving it instructions to draw a set of shapes. And through that, you're able to store a lot of animations and cool drawings on a lot less space, because back then people were storing games on floppy disks. And I don't know how much of you guys know how much a floppy disk stores, but by today's standards, you could probably fit half a song onto a single floppy disk. So that's how small they were back then. And back then, people were putting entire games on these disks. Times have changed. I'm going to hit you with another song from kind of the same era and another different game. Very different. It was only on the Sega Mega Drive, this game. But it had something else in common with Another World. It was very atmospheric, and it also gave you something you just didn't get in many other games. I'll play it now, and I'll talk a little more about it later. And that was the intro. And that was the intro. And that was the intro to Echo. And that was the intro to Echo. Tide the time. And that was the intro. And that was the intro to Echo. Tides of Time. And that was the intro to Echo. Tides of Time. It was developed by Novatrade International. And that intro had music by Attila Dobos, Andre Maggieri, David Gisvasola, and Andy Armour. Now, Echo the Tides of the Time, also the sequel to Echo the Dolphin, was these games that were kind of a mascot almost for Sega back in the Mega Drive days, and even extended into the Dreamcast. You were a dolphin, and that was the most awesome thing about it. I mean, seriously, games, even back then, people were getting tired of, like, games where you shot stuff or you jumped on stuff. This, you were a dolphin. it was you swam around the seas, you jumped in the air, you did backflips. That was actually one of the really cool things about the game. When you jumped into the air, pressing the C button would make the dolphin spin around and do a flip, and you could, like, you know, angle yourself and you'd spin up and you'd jump out of the sea and do a flip, and it would be fun. And the point, whole thing was, the game, it was completely pointless. I mean, that's why you did it, because it was pointless. A lot of games, they try to attribute meaning or validation to what you do. It's like they give you points for even minor actions. They give you achievements for doing these things. But if a game doesn't let you do something completely pointless, then where's the fun in that? You come up with your own reasons for doing things, and you were a freaking dolphin, and you were going to jump out of the water and do a spin and dive back in and then do it again because it was damn fun, and that was awesome. The game, I mean, that was really the great thing. It just had a simple concept and it just went with it. The game actually had a bit of a sci-fi twist to it as well. You weren't just a dolphin, you didn't just swim around seas. There were also these aliens that were trying to screw things up a little, and there was time travel involved. You ended up traveling into the future and seeing one future where everything is pristine and brilliant, and like dolphins are hugely intelligent and can swim in the sky and are telepathic, and there are all these tubes of water you swim through. And then you go to an evil future where all the aliens have taken over the planet, and like everything, all the dolphins have been subjugated. I mean, it really took the whole idea of that these dolphins were so intelligent creatures and that you were one of them, and there was with societies and things and customs. And you, of course, played Echo, this dolphin who had stars on his head that looked like stars in the sky, as they said. Which is actually funny because there were white marks in his head that were in the exact same constellation of the Dauphine constellation, which is a star constellation that looks like a dolphin. But the games were... I mean, to be honest, I actually really only completed the second game. I came across the first game much later on the PSP collection, and I found it incredibly, incredibly hard. It is not an easy game. I think I gave up around the part where I started getting crushed by ice floes. But, you know, I played the second one, which was thankful, which I started with, was a brilliant game in and of itself. You're swimming around, there's a story that connects things together, and you're at one point you're collecting orbs for an asteroid. But the true thing is, it's just you swim around these great areas and you just progress the game. And like I said, the sort of songs that you heard there, great atmosphere, and it was just fun, because, like I said, games, I think, are always a bit about escapism, doing things you could never normally do. Yet it's ironic, because a lot of games end up giving you the same sorts of experiences over and over again, but damn it, you know, this was saying, let's play as a dolphin! And you did, and it was enjoyable. The Echo the Tides of Time actually ended kind of with an unanswered question. Now, it was okay, don't worry. It's not like you defeated the alien in the last few seconds it suddenly said, oh, wait a sec, the alien is back. No, you did defeat the alien at the end, but then you went on a little mission, and it didn't quite tell you how it ended. So, naturally, I was excited that they'd answer the question, and then later on, couple of years later, they finally released a game for the Sega Dreamcast, and they didn't continue the story, which was okay, because the Echo the Dolphin for the Dreamcast was also pretty awesome. It's when a lot of characters went from 2D to 3D, you know, a lot of them didn't quite make it. I think I heard that Simon the Sorcerer was one of those casualties, but I truly felt that Echo the Dolphin for the Sega Dreamcast was really true to the Echo theme, though it still had the brilliant surroundings, so many different creatures, and it was just a pleasure to play. So I don't know if they're ever going to make another game. It's kind of, I think Appaloosa Interactive, as they're now known, have shut down, unfortunately. But some great games, let's never forget them. Alright, I think we're going to move on to our last track now. Since it's going to be our last track, I'm obviously going to have to give a bit of explanation to it. This is from a game called Blue Stinger. Now, actually, I was thinking about this, actually. I was thinking, I've been playing a lot of tunes, but I think it's been a while since I played like a full-scale, like, orchestral thing. So what game would sort of suit that? And Blue Stinger came to mind. It was a launch game for the Sega Dreamcast in 1999. And it's actually what I'd like to call a B video game. Now, as you know, you probably know of B-movies. These are movies that you enjoy, even though you realize they're not actually that good, right? Now, to be honest, the term B-movie is, in its derisive known, is a bit of a misnomer. It originally happened when movies were playing double features, so B-movie was simply the lesser-known movie that was playing after the one most people know about. But it went on because it obviously mutated on from them, became known for movies that were so bad that people just enjoyed watching them for the sake of it. In that case, Blue Stinger is like a boom Eevee game because I know it's not that good, but I really enjoyed playing it. Now, part of it was the music, but part of it is that everything in it seemed to fit together. Your name was Elliot Blatt, and you were on a ship going near this island that had some research colonies and habitation and things set up, when suddenly an asteroid strikes, and suddenly the island is surrounded by a force field, and suddenly you're knocked unconscious, and instead of drowning in the water, you end up getting washed ashore, and then you get a transmission from a woman trapped on the island, and she says there's a whole lot of trouble going on. So you move on, and you meet up with this guy called Dog Sparrow, and you suddenly start realizing, holy heck, there's a whole lot of aliens on this island, they're killing all these people, and what are we going to do? So what you do is you grab a lot of weapons and keep exploring the island, going on a bunch of missions in order to try to defeat the aliens and figure out what they're planning, and then defeat that too, because damn it, when have aliens in a video game ever come to Earth to make peace or anything like that? So that's all well and good, but the game is basically a third person adventure. You use the analog stick and you move Elliot or Dog's Bower as you meet him around, and you basically beat up aliens and you go from point A to point B. But the thing is, it's just a fun game. I'm never quite sure what makes it so fun. I mean, for one thing, it's just uncomplicated. The developers throw in a bit of humor and a bit of fun. It doesn't take itself too seriously. To put another point, at one point, one of your characters has to dress up as Father Christmas, and I forget the exact reason why, but I'm pretty sure you couldn't progress through the game unless one of your characters had dressed himself up like Father Christmas. Stuff like that. Another part, there were some fun thing where you have to climb to the top of an oil tanker and then basically set it off to explode, and you basically get thrown off by the huge explosion. And also the bright colours. One of the characters is wearing bright blue, the other is bright orange and yellow. I mean, and at one stage in the game also, you find yourself in a shopping centre and you find out that in order to progress the game, you have to collect all these cartoon character toys. And then when you're doing this, the woman who's in the control centre trying to check on your progress phones you up, asks you what you're doing, and she's somewhat unimpressed when you give her an honest answer. I suppose a sense of humour is part of it. Part of it is, like I said, it's uncomplicated. It's straightforward. The cutscenes are also a great thing about it. I think it's one of the games that does cutscenes right more than anything. They give you a nice big cutscene at the beginning to establish things, but it's not drawn out. They give you through the details and move you on. And what's more, when you're playing a game and a cutscene starts, it's instantaneous. It's like, it's seamless. At one stage in the game, you're running down a corridor, and then suddenly the camera shifts, and suddenly it's showing you characters interacting with another creature, and it takes you a second to realize that it's a cutscene. And I just really like that, because a lot of games have this thing where you're walking around, and suddenly there's a big loading screen, and then suddenly the cutscene starts, and it kind of takes you, and I just loved how in Blue Stinger the cutscene would start automatically, and so it would just feel like it was happening right at this very moment, and the cutscene would end, and you'd immediately have control of your character again. Now, loading times between when you went from one room to the other, they were a little longer, but let's not point out the flaws, which a lot of people pointed out, such as the voice acting, which I thought was hilariously bad, or the facial expressions, which I thought were cartoonishly fun. It was just such a... I just really enjoyed the game, and I've had fun moving through it, and every time I seemed to get a little bored or my interest would lag, something fun would pop up, and would make the game all the more interesting again. And that's what I just loved about it. Like I said, maybe it's not a brilliant game, maybe it doesn't push forward the boundaries, but there was just something that it gave a character, and I just really enjoyed playing it, even though it just seemed a bit of a... It seemed a pretty silly game, but no, it wasn't. It was just really a lot of fun. Now, the music in that game was made by Toshikoko Sashashi or something. I'll try it again. Toshiko Sahashi. Now, you probably haven't heard of him, but apparently he's a really talented composer, and it pays off. I mean, the music in this game is great. It's very atmospheric. Even when you're, like, doing a small task, there's this great big... And it's just... It really helps get the motivation and mood and atmosphere of the game going, and it's just a lot of fun. Toshiko actually has done some other stuff for Actually, I think this was the only video game he did music for. He's done stuff called Kamen Rider, Hunter x Hunter, Gundam, and if you haven't watched any of them, well, that's probably because you don't live in Japan. Those shows are massive in Japan. I don't know how he ended up doing music for Blue Stinger. Obviously, I'm not researching my show material enough, but what I'm about to play is the music from the outro sequence. The ending of the game. I was going to play it from the beginning, but I thought, I don't know, it kind of ramps you up a little much. So I don't want to end the show on being ramped up. I want to end it on a nice, good music that just finishes things off. This is David Collins with Bitnote, leaving you with the ending music of Blue Stinger. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time.